Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today. My guest for this week's episode is April Pride, and she is the founder of the website of likeminds.co, and also she is the host of the High Guide podcast. April likes to focus on women's issues in relation to psychedelics and cannabis. And in this conversation, we get into how she's looked at women's fluctuating hormone levels throughout the course of a month and how that impacts their sensitivity to different psychedelic substances, and also just what it's like being a woman working in the psychedelic space and also in the cannabis space, and all kinds of other related topics. It's a great conversation, and I'm looking forward to bringing it to you shortly. Let's just get a few announcements out of the way first. This week, thanks goes out to James, who makes a small monthly contribution via PayPal here in support of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast. So thank you once again, James. If you would like to support this podcast with a PayPal donation, it's quite easy. Just stop by my personal webpage at martinball.net. Use the PayPal link at the top right of the page, or you can link from there over to my Patreon page, patreon.com/martinwball. As I mentioned last week, I am a sign-up bonus for anybody who joins at the $20 a month or up levels, or levels up from $20 a month or beyond, who is already a patron over at Patreon. And that is a free PDF copy of my AI-imagined art illustrated version of the Solendarian game. So if you join at those levels, or if you upgrade, you get the entire book, which is about 425 pages as a PDF with over 600 full-color images to go along with the book. And I actually have another new offer that is related to the Solendarian game, the AI art imagined version, that I would like to offer to anyone who is interested. I have created a PDF of the first five chapters of the book, and the whole book is arranged around five different point of view characters, and so it cycles through these five characters all the way through the novel. So we've got Theo, Ash, Haidar, Norbu, and Shunsu, and then just cycles through them for the entire story. So I've made the first five chapters available as a free PDF for people to download. It's available over at my Google Drive. I'm going to put a link in the comments or in the description here for this week's podcast. And also, if you would just like to get the link directly from me, just shoot me an email at martinwball@gmail.com. And you can either view it online or you can download it, and you're welcome to share it with anybody that you like. And as I mentioned, we still have a bit more that I'm going to be sharing from the Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT book here on the podcast. We have one more chapter, and then we have some appendices that I'm going to be sharing. But after that, I am going to return to sharing the Solendarian game audiobook in between interviews here on the podcast. And I thought it would be fun if more people had the AI imagined art illustrated version of the novel, and you could read along and look at the pictures as I am sharing the story here on the podcast. So that's going to be coming in the next couple of months. But the free five-chapter PDF is available for anybody who wants it. So use the link here, or again, shoot me an email at martinwball@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link to where you can download that and take a look for yourself. Also, just to give you a quick update, I pretty much have a full version of my latest book, which is 5-MeO-DMT Integration, Embodying Non-Duality is Not What You Think, Education and Empowerment for Working with the God Molecule. I'm in the process of ordering a proof copy of the paperback book. It's going to be a few weeks to get all that done and then to proof it. But then the book is pretty much ready to go, and it's going to be available in paperback and ebook. And then it will be some months after that that the audiobook will be available. So you can look for that coming relatively soon. And I'm really excited about that. I think that's all that I have in terms of announcements for this week. Of course, if you would like to book a call to help you integrate your entheogenic experience, stop by at nondualentheogenicintegration.com, or again, shoot me an email. I offer 30, 60, and 90-minute video calls from a non-dual and energetic perspective, helping you understand your experience and your process. And I'm always happy to set up a call with you. Okay, so I think that's all that I have in terms of initial announcements here. Let's get into the conversation with April Pride. Just a reminder, she's the founder of likeminds.co. That's her website. And also the High Guide podcast, which is thehigh.guide in terms of an online link, and the links will be available in the description for this week's episode. Enjoy. We'll be back next week with a little bit more from Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT, the audiobook, and of course, more interviews after that. So be well, enjoy your week, and I'll talk to you again soon. Okay, I want to welcome on to the Entheogenic Evolution podcast, April Pride. April, welcome to the show, and I'll just really quickly introduce you and then ask you to introduce yourself, but you are the founder of Like Minds, a website, and we're probably going to be talking about that, and you are the host of The High Guide, and when you initially approached me with an email, you did say that you were very interested in talking about issues with regarding women and psychedelics, and we have a little list of some topics here about integration and optimizing psychedelic experience, trip sitters, women and psychedelics, recreational healing, psilocybin, ketamine for divorce, depression, and dependency, flower girls, cannabis use in the modern woman, and a whole bunch of other topics. So I think there's a lot that we can talk about today. But first, just let me say, April, welcome to the show. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you, Martin. I appreciate being here. And yeah. I appreciate all the library of content that I've been digesting, thanks to you. So yeah, thanks for everything.
Cool. I always do like to ask, where are we connecting from? Where are you physically in the world?
Seattle, Washington.
Oh, see, another West Coaster. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's the weather up in Seattle today?
You know, I saw some blue skies out there. It was, yeah, you know, it's Seattle in the winter. Yeah. You can use your imagination. Some days are good.
Yeah. Well, today, Southern Oregon is nice and blue sky and some scattered clouds. It's been a little bit cold and rainy and cloudy, but it's looking quite nice and beautiful today.
I heard that for you. Great.
Yeah. But I haven't been outside. I've been busy working on a book, so I've just been in front of the computer all day. But so, April, I always like to start people off who are kind of new on the podcast. You know, of course, when I have somebody as a returning guest, it's not as important, but I always like this kind of start with, since this is a podcast about psychedelics and entheogens, I always invite people to share whatever they want of their own personal history of how you got into this subject and really what it means for you at a personal level. And I know that some people are more comfortable talking about their own experiences, and others are a little bit more standoffish about it, but it's a place that I like to start. So I'd invite you to share whatever you would like from your own personal experience in life.
I would say that my the origin story of me and psychedelics, it looks very similar to a lot of people's, I'm sure. It actually involved psilocybin mushrooms before even cannabis. And drinking. So I started there. And someone handed me a Ziploc bag at about 11 o'clock at night after, you know, just getting back to school. Actually, it was the first night back for the second semester, my first year of college. And I hung out with people that did these things, but I did not do these things. But that night I did. And it was really wild, right? So we didn't have, there's no dosing. Like I said, someone handed us a bag and we said yes. And I can say that my experiences in college with mushrooms, the next time I chose to have some, I actually was in Jamaica and went to Miss Brown's tea house and spent the first day I went with the guys, and I went back and told all the girls we have to do it too. And went back the next day with the girls, and both days just stayed outside. And it was really, it was super lovely. And I remember someone saying to me, April, you look like you were born to feel like this. And, you know, a lot of drinking and choices that were not as like, you know, clearly a fit for me ensued for 2 decades, right? And having mushrooms was definitely not something that happened frequently in my life. I went from the East Coast in Virginia, that's where I was at school, to California. So more cannabis, I would say. Mm-hmm. But even still not responsible usage if we think about, you know, mixing alcohol with anything. Not a good idea for me. It has really shown to be a poor choice to mix those things. And certain, like no red wine, weed, right? You figure it out. And so I've figured out a lot and found myself working in the cannabis space starting in 2015 as a creative entrepreneur that thought I would design really cool stash accessories to store, smoke, and share cannabis. But what I ended up doing is realizing that I had a way of communicating this topic to women that was resonating with them. And so all those hard-learned lessons on my own and that others had shared with me, I turned into a business that I eventually sold to the largest cannabis company in the world. And it's an educational platform for women in cannabis called Vanderpop. And so how I find myself in the psychedelic space nearly 10 years after I started that first business, and I've had three exits. So I really am a creative entrepreneur. I like to solve problems. And I've usually done that with design as products as my focus. And for the last 5 years, I've had a podcast like you. So it's been more my words that are my product and the stories that I want to get out. And that's been quite a shift. And so what the reason I transitioned from my work in cannabis to really, I would say I'm in psychedelics, but I really focus on psilocybin. And that is a choice that just happened in 2023. Because I heard from so many people that microdosing psilocybin is what really like transformed their life.
Yeah.
That was the thing. And it felt to me like, well, if it's that accessible and it requires the least amount of like vulnerability, you know, maybe that's, I learned a lot in cannabis and we really, really did not do things correctly when it came to the consumer by putting primarily high potency THC products as the only choice on shelves when it was first, as it was rolling out state to state. And so I feel like I'm here in psilocybin at this time because I learned so much in the rapidly emerging cannabis space in Canada, right? Because I sold from Seattle into the Canadian space before it was even voted in by Parliament. So I was really there for that full ride. And yeah, I would like to be a part of this movement in a way that really has consumers, particularly women from the beginning, making sure they have the right experience and it's positive and it includes integration. So I found myself with a podcast called The High Guide because I like to get high. But what I've seen really helps people and myself is microdosing psilocybin and making sure you have therapy alongside it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm just kind of curious about your own perspective of sort of this idea of the women, role of women in the cannabis space and in psychedelics that, you know, when we go back and we look at the big names in a lot of these movements, obviously it's largely been dominated by men. I think that we're seeing a massive shift, like with where we are currently. There's a lot more women that are, you know, hosting podcasts, being on podcasts, speaking at conferences, active. But it has largely been dominated by men, historically speaking. And so I'm just curious about your experience of sort of entering into and in within this 10-year time period, and then also most recently, you know, as microdosing has really become a big topic and people are very interested in it, how would you describe the access, the visibility, the voice that you as a woman and also for women in general, you know, in terms of serving women, creating products from the podcast to the website specifically for women. Just how would you characterize that? How would you speak for that experience?
I think that in cannabis, what I saw was there were nearly a third of all senior executive positions in cannabis in 2015 when I started in the space were held by women. And the more quote opportunity there became in the space, the fewer of those decision-making roles were held by women. So when it's a nascent industry and there are people that are passionate about what's happening and they're willing to become founders when they've never, you know, that was not on their list of things to do, but their advocacy really like compelled them, right, to be there and making sure that patients are being considered. Those people, you know, so many women were part of the medical community that then found themselves in this rapidly emerging adult use space. And now we don't have the numbers that we need in decision-making roles for women because there is an inverse correlation of more opportunity, fewer women making decisions or in decision-making roles. So in psilocybin, it's interesting. I have a lot to say about this. So I've been doing research on healthcare practitioners and providers in the buckets of licensed therapists, executive coaches, psychiatric nurse practitioners, clinical social workers. Across those categories of mental health professionals, let's say, between 70 and 80% of them are women. So healers are women. Right?
Yeah.
That's how it's been. And so I don't know how that's going to affect the rapidly emerging psychedelic space, but we're already starting with like a lot of women who have been involved in very, very critical ways for a long time, starting with Maria Sabrina. Like it, you know, there is a history there, but I'm happy to see that currently two-thirds, there was a recent report by Vital, which is Psychedelics Today podcast, that two-thirds of the people that are graduating from their programs are women. So yeah, women will remain strong in this space. I don't see that going anywhere.
Yeah. And I think demographically, you know, with sociological analysis that this is probably some of the information that you've come across, that when looking at who is more into quote unquote alternative therapies, that demographically within the United States, traditionally that has leaned more heavily towards women than it has towards men. And it's even interesting to sort of in this question with microdosing, because I think a big part of kind of the old school psychedelic movement, a lot of it was about, you know, the heroic doses, let's take as much as we can, let's be these intrepid explorers and all of this stuff. And, you know, when we're looking at sort of that model of psychedelic approach, I can't think of any women. I mean, you mentioned Maria Sabina, but in terms of like North American culture, like, were there any women out there saying that? And I do know some women today, and you know, I've had them on the podcast, like, for example, Acacia Lewis was a recent guest of mine, and she's into very, very large doses of mushrooms. But definitely a big demographic that I've seen as well is that women seem more interested in the microdosing than men, you know, just overall. It's not to say that men aren't interested, because they certainly are. So I'm curious, do you feel that there's a particular appeal there? And sometimes what I hear women say, and just totally correct me if you say, like, dude, that's just a terrible stereotype. But often I hear women say, well, I'm naturally more sensitive, so I'm more interested in taking a lower dose rather than trying to blow my mind. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on those positions.
I think you bring up a couple of really, really astute observations. And the first is that I know this from talking to ketamine facilitators, or they're not really facilitating, they're actually administering the dose. Mm-hmm. That the conversation that they're having with men is like, let's just go to the moon. Yeah. And with women, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear. So they want to start lower. And I think that could be because, to your point earlier, like, men have probably tried psychedelics at some point in their life or something that was going to make them lose control. They like to go fast. Like, there's just this more, I have two sons, so I'm speaking with a little bit of experience, unfortunately. But with women, you know, we consider our decisions and our mortality in a different way. And so yeah, with ketamine, I know that the request is definitely let's start low. And then with microdosing, I don't want to in any way suggest that microdosing is the only way to, you know, work with psilocybin. It's not. Like, there is definitely a place for higher doses for sure. But if we think about the fact that women like to start low because they don't want to lose control, I think that this is the best way to show them what's possible with this medicine a little bit at a time. And then, yeah, they'll have the experience that really takes them out of themselves and puts them in touch with a higher being, with a higher purpose, with some consciousness, something larger than themselves. So, but I think based on my experience, we have to start low, because if they have a bad experience, we lose them to, you know, that opportunity to really, you know, be in touch with themselves in a maybe for the first time in a long time, if ever.
Yeah. And actually another demographic that just sort of popped into my mind is that recently I've been doing some interviews with retreat facilitators and people who run retreats, and also people who, have investigated retreats and kind of looking at demographics and things like that. And also in my integration calls that I have with people, this is something that often gets commented on by both men and women, that they say that if they go to a retreat, it's predominantly women who are at these like ayahuasca retreats or psilocybin retreats. And there usually people are working with at least somewhat larger doses. I mean, those aren't for microdosing. Those are for larger doses. But even there, they're often people are commenting on that there is a conscious discrepancy where women are often asking for a smaller glass of ayahuasca and the men are over there like, yeah, fill it all the way up and then give me another one. So that there is that demographic of women who are looking for those bigger and deeper experiences, but those looks like they're taking place mostly in sort of this retreat kind of context and setting. Whereas microdosing is very accessible to people within their daily lives, right? You don't need to go anywhere. You don't need to take a break from life. And I think that that's probably a big element for women, many who are mothers, they're working, they don't have the luxury of, well, I can just go take 2 weeks and, you know, blow my mind and reintegrate. Mm-hmm. So it seems much more practical at that level.
I also think there was something that you suggested earlier, which is that women are more prone to say yes to, quote, alternative modalities, or like I like to say unorthodox ways of optimizing their well-being, you know, like... Mm-hmm. And so that's true because we've been let down by Western medicine oftentimes. And in some ways it's, you know, SSRIs, for instance. Women are more likely to be prescribed anti-anxiety medication, right? I mean, the 60s was like, have a drink, relax, even if you're pregnant, right? So we've come a long way, but we've just basically changed the medicine that doctors are recommending. Women are more likely to be prescribed highly addictive pharmaceuticals than men are. And they're less likely that their pain is even believed. So, you know, they have to figure this out for themselves and on their own. So that's why I think we have a lot of women among one another have these really rich anecdotal stories of how these compounds have changed their life and the way that they're doing it. They're very like, I take this much on this, you know, they really have figured out how to personalize their protocol. But the other part of that is why wait till a retreat, right? Mm-hmm. If there's somebody in your community that can help you go deeper, why do you have to get on an airplane, fly to another country, be in the middle of a jungle, like among people? Because it takes so much for it to feel real that you can give yourself permission. Oh, if you do it this way, then I'm doing it the right way. And that's the way to do it. And I don't feel like anything can go wrong, that I have chosen to do something that's like out of the norm more than it already is. Mm-hmm. And there's just this, I think that there's a lot of trust outside of our own communities, which I find interesting too.
Yeah. And even just a few more things that kind of popped into my mind as we're having this conversation is, you know, just even looking at the history of women in medical care, that, you know, we do know that originally male doctors were only studying male anatomy and male bodies. And then they say, and now let's try and adjust it for a woman without ever even looking at a woman or looking at female anatomy, which just seems bizarre, but that's what they did. And of course we had, you know, the diagnosis of, oh, that's female hysteria, right? And, oh, so let's give this woman laudanum or, you know, something like that. And so there's a history of that. And even going back further, you know, when you mentioned that women have often been healers, you know, we have to go all the way back into like the Inquisition in Europe, as the Catholic Church is going around Europe and finding quote unquote witches and burning them at the stake and murdering them and overriding their herbal and healing knowledge. Even there, I just use the word man, right? That the medical system has been biased against women for a long time, but it has then resulted in sort of this curious demarcation where you can go to a man often and you can say, like, what do you do for self-care? And it's like, what's that? Yeah. You know, versus I think many contemporary women, oh, Moxie, cool it. This is the problem with my place, is that there's a green space right over there, which is not a problem. It's lovely, but deer and turkey walk back there. And so my dog has to make her presence known during my podcast. But just to complete the thought, for many contemporary women, the idea of self-care is a major part of who they are and their routine. So I'm curious if you would, like to explain to the men who is like, what is self-care? What would that concept mean for you as a woman? And also, I don't want to impose it on you if it's not a term that you use. And actually, just let me put Moxie in the next room so we can not have her commenting.
All good. Yeah.
So to return, maybe how does microdosing psilocybin fit into women's concepts of self-care?
I mean, I feel like... You know, we talk about using these compounds in ways that reduce harm. And I think for women, the point of choosing to use them to begin with is in an effort to reduce harm, right? And that has become a little bit of what self-care is. We're trying to minimize the downstream effects of having to work too much, having to say yes all the time, there never being enough time, particularly for the people you love the most, right? Like, it just is, you're not doing enough and you're not doing anything well, right? It just is this constant message, it feels like. Women, we really internalize it. We take it personally. We don't ever think, I shouldn't speak for everyone. I oftentimes forget that another person's priorities don't have to be mine. And there's a kind way to like reshift things with a person so that they better understand kind of really what you're capable of. And to be honest with you, I don't even think that women know how to ask for it. And microdosing, as it's been played out in my life, is just that pause before you say yes, so that you think about, can I really do this and not take, you know, not have affect my self-care? And really, self-care is just like finding time to make space in all of it. That's how I feel about self-care, because, I mean, I can't spend $1,000 a month, you know, to have someone else impose self-care onto me, right? Yeah. So how am I creating that? And I've found that microdosing has really just allowed me to make time for myself to go on a walk. Oh, the sun's shining right now. It actually is. You should go for a 30-minute walk. And I don't think I would have allowed myself to do that before I started regularly microdosing. Never.
Yeah. So in terms then of bringing this to others and making space for people to share, to learn from each other, and also make products available, what started first? The Of Like Minds website, the High Guide podcast, they develop at the same time. But I'm curious to just get into more now of just kind of the blow by blow of how this developed for you and where you found there was the greatest need and the greatest response and what people are gaining from that.
Yeah. So, that's a great question. I started a podcast after I left Canopy in early 2019 called How to Do the Pot. I created it and, asked a woman that I went to college with to help me with it. She has since purchased it and now she is the host, but I helped to write and host the first 60 episodes and really created the brand. And that was because women still had a lot of questions about cannabis. I had been traveling to Toronto from Seattle for 2 years and had young children and really wanted to do something that allowed me to stay put. And then the pandemic hit. So we had this podcast for a couple of years and we had a newsletter that we called the High Guide. And I was like, I just really want to focus on that, the stuff that gets you high. We've been talking about CBD and low dose and whitewashing cannabis. I was a big part of all of that. And there's not really much new to report. There is not enough research. I'm watching the content I created since 2015 be like recycled and served back to me, right? Like because we don't have anything new really to talk about. So as a creative that's using my words, as we talked about in the beginning of the show, I needed to bite my teeth into something else, right?
Yeah.
And so, excuse me for just 1 second.
Yeah.
Sorry. So the High Guide, the first season is about high potency THC products. And then that's the next season I partnered with electronic music retailer here in Seattle to tap their network and have these composers create music to trip to. Mm. And so we would listen, or the piece would air in the first episode of the series. And then the next episode would be someone who would listen to it, taken mostly psilocybin, and then is reporting back their integration of that experience. And
cool idea. Oh my God, that's so amazing.
It was really fun. It was really, really fun. And then the third season, we worked with one facilitator and three women. And so it's a narrative-based podcast. It's not a Q&A. So I'm trying to weave a story through the season from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. And so the point of the third season is you learn what a full intake through integration looks like by listening to a facilitator do it with these three women. You learn how to set an intention. So with the podcast, my goal has always been to help make learning how to do anything, in this case, psychedelics, and really, like I said, it's become psilocybin, how to do it equitably. You don't have to spend a lot of money. This is a free resource. I want people to figure this out without having to resort to spending a lot of money and, maybe even growing their own mushrooms, right? Yeah. So the fourth season became pretty personal because I had very strong opinions about ketamine and really started talking to some medical providers and healthcare providers that were working with ketamine with their patients and seeing incredible results. So I had to kind of wind that back and acknowledge the difference between what people choose to do recreationally and what's available when you use it in a therapeutic way. And so we explore that and how ketamine helped me through depression and cannabis use disorder after my divorce in 2021. So that's a pretty personal season. The fifth season is, it's all about shrooming, basically. And then most recently, we did like 12 of my favorite episodes over like 100, almost 150 episodes, and revisited them. So each season is self-contained. And I, behind the scenes, develop products. So I created an integrative microdosing protocol with a licensed therapist. Her name is Kendra Bloom. And we're just wrapping up a pilot program where we worked with, depending on the night, we had 10 women that were enrolled in what we're calling MicroSite. And they are integrating their microdosing experiences over a 12-week period in group. And so if I've been able to piece anything together, it's that the group therapy integration model has a lot of benefit for people, from a cost standpoint to just accountability and building community. So that's something that we're working on behind the scenes to roll out as a curriculum directly to healthcare providers and practitioners who are looking to help their patients work with microdosing psilocybin, but they don't really know where to start. And then I created a deck of integration cards called Set, that's $35, with some partners out of Toronto. So can very easily take what I like to call a museum dose, which is about a half a gram to just under a gram of psilocybin, play the deck of cards, and really connect with whomever you're playing with, people you know well or not so well, in a playful way that is, you know, a departure from what's on your newsfeed. And then we're starting, actually the first official event will be 420 this year, here in Seattle. I've partnered with The Stranger, which is an alternative weekly in Seattle, and their founder is Tim Keck. And he was one of the founders at The Onion before he started the Seattle Weekly, Stranger, which is a Seattle Weekly, and the Portland Mercury. And so he's writing every month five things to do on a museum dose in Seattle, and then the audience votes on which one we should meet up every third Saturday and do together. And that starts this spring. And I think there are going to be a lot of fun opportunities to create community that come from that. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. There's a few things I just want to comment on and circle back on, but I just want to say that I can definitely perceive your entrepreneurial spirit coming through just through the diversity of what you just shared. I mean, there was so many different things that you just touched on. And I really like this idea of sort of these meetups with the museum dose, and just kind of focusing on that idea of connection, community, sharing, and socializing. And I think that to some degree that's something that we're kind of losing in the modern emphasis on everything has got to be serious therapy, and you've got to be doing serious integration, and you've got to be like really like looking at your shit and using this for healing. But it overlooks the fact that taking psychedelics could be a lot of fun. They can open us up to really powerful social experiences. And I even liked when you were saying earlier about your earlier mushroom experiences, about how you had a mushroom experience outside. And that's just that right there. That's something like here in Oregon, where we have the legal psilocybin therapy program, it's all done in a room. And you got, you know, your eye shades on, and it's so you can focus on the inner work. But that experience of being outside or being with others, I just feel that it doesn't get enough airplay these days, because there's this overwhelming emphasis on the therapeutic approach. I do want to circle back around just as a podcaster to another. I want to talk a little bit more about the podcast, but I also just wanted to ask, since you mentioned the idea of having the music producers bring their music on and then have somebody trip to it and give a report about it, that it made me really want to share a brief story with you about a trippy musical experience that
awesome.
I had.
Yeah, great.
Okay. So I've got a couple fun ones, but the one that first came to mind, this was probably 2015, so it was a while ago now. At the time, my wife and I were doing a lot of music together. I was the music producer and songwriter and all of that, and she was the singer. And I wrote a song for her to sing called Bright Eyes Becoming, and it was about our boy, Jaden, who is very, very young at the time. You know, he's coming up on 11 years old in the next couple of months here. So obviously he was pretty fresh back then when I wrote this song for her. So, we had recorded the song and I just mixed and mastered it along with a couple of other songs. And, I did a solo night of MDMA and I had my earbuds in, and this song that she wrote came on, and I was totally peaking on the MDMA at this point, and it comes on. And I know this is going to sound a little bit weird because it was a song about our son, but you know, it's just the way it happened. I can't control this. As she started to sing in the song, okay, again, this is kind of weird, but the best description I can have, I know this sounds weird, but it was like my ears were vaginas, and that she was licking her voice.
That's amazing.
And I had simultaneous cosmic orgasms in both ears. I mean, it was like my whole head exploded, and it was this very erotic, just this overwhelming sense of love experience. And it was, and after that, I was like, oh my God, did I just have simultaneous eargasms? Like, what's going on here? I mean, it was just,
wow.
It floored me. I've never had an experience like that either before or since. So it was just a one-off, but man, that was the most interesting, powerful listening experience I've ever had.
That it does not surprise me. I mean, they are audio and the psychedelic experience are, yeah, I mean, they are connected in ways that really can make or break, transform your journey.
Yeah.
Like almost nothing else. Just even seeing things. Like for me recently, my eyesight gets so blurry when even smoking cannabis, like, you know, not to diminish, you know, the impact that can have, but typically that has not been the case for me. But I've noticed over the course of a couple of years, like anything, psilocybin, LSD, it's really blurry. And so that's not totally fun all the time, but I can hear.
Yeah.
And that takes you to all sorts of places, right? So, yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, that's really what we were trying to help people see, whether or not they continue to listen to our journeys or they just figure out, like, you need music when you do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't have to have a 12-hour playlist, but just know if you change the audio, you're going to change your experience even at that second, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The auditory input, I think, is just so much more important than, as you say, any kind of visual input. Mm-hmm. Visual input, you can close your eyes. It's not possible to close your ears.
Right.
You can't do it. And it also doesn't matter what level of consciousness you are in, with you know, the exception of if somebody goes into a completely absorptive non-dual state where there's no longer subject and object, at that point, someone will not register music. And they also won't register like auditory input. Like if somebody tries speaking to them, they actually won't hear it at that point. But anything short of that, you are going to be able to register the auditory input of music. So no matter what state you're in on your psychedelic experience, the music will break through. It will cut through. Mm-hmm. And how we are either resonating with that or reacting to that or feel an emotional connection to that, that input changes what then unfolds within our experience. And as you say, you can change the song and immediately you're getting a different experience. I mean, it's so fascinating in a way that you know, you can hold up a picture to someone, they're like, oh, that's interesting. Hold up another picture, that's interesting. It's not going to have anywhere near the same impact upon their experience as changing music would have.
I mean, is it literally vibrational? Because our eardrums they're vibrating in different ways, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happened for you, right?
Yeah.
Because it's physical and emotional, but it's physical in a very minute way. It's not like gross motor, you know, it's more fine motor, but internal.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. Yeah.
But it also plugs into, I think something that ultimately it speaks to our fundamental human nature in the same way that you can take a baby and put on music and then they start like, you know, or yeah. they'll try and clap along. Right, they're usually not on beat, but we're the only animal that does that.
That's true. Yeah. Right. Nobody
else immediately like follows the beat. So this whole idea of musical input that is responded to by the body seems to be a fundamental aspect of what makes us a human being. And then, you know, when we look at anthropologically speaking, I mean, you are not going to find a single culture in the world, except maybe Puritans because they were weird, who don't celebrate through song and dance and chant.
Mm. Right.
So it's just, it's such a part of who we are, and it has been through our evolutionary progress.
There, I mean, the relationship must be, okay, so consciousness is something that only, we're the only species human that can really comprehend this, right? And yeah. can participate in it. And that connects all of us as humans. And yeah. sound and sort of this involuntary or natural movement that occurs when you hear a beat from anywhere in the world, anyone's culture, right? Like you move to it. I don't know. That feels like that also connects us. There's a really something there because there are very few, maybe I'm not educated enough. I shouldn't say that, but it seems like there would be very few human only characteristics that are of that ilk, yeah. you know, that connect you. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's a good one. I could talk about music forever, but I did want to ask
you. Make sure that you have the link then to the episode so you can hear them.
Yeah. That'd be a lot of fun. So just in you describing your podcast, this is where I say, I want to ask you a question as from one podcaster to another, that obviously it's a very different beast. It's a very different package, what you're dealing with. So for me, like a podcast is, you know, let's be honest, it's minimal effort. I have a guest on, we start having a conversation. Sometimes when my dog's barking, I have to go back and, okay, let's edit out the dog barking. But there's not a lot of editing to go on. And I just like to have, like, here's the conversation. Mm-hmm. And then it goes out on the podcast. But what you're describing is much more along the lines of, like, what I would expect of a, you know, quote unquote, produced podcast, where you're developing a story that connects over a season. It sounds like probably you're at the very least outlining scripts and storyboards. So I'm just kind of curious about the process. Like, what does it mean? Like, I'm always interested in any kind of behind the scenes footage, so to speak. Like, what does it take to put this product out, and what does it require of you as the host of the podcast? So anything you'd like to say along those lines, I'm curious about. I know it's not strictly talking about psychedelics or the work in that field, but I'm just interested as a podcaster and as a person, like, what does it take to do that?
Well, I think at the heart of it, it has everything to do with psychedelics, because I'm fortunate to be able to use the show as a way to educate myself in the space, right? Mm. Like being, what I noticed in the spring of 2021 is that there were quote influencers on Instagram that had canna in their handle that were talking about psilocybin mushrooms. And it just felt like, okay, if this is something that people are curious about or participating in, me too, but what does that mean if you're going to be influential in how people are learning about it, right? Like, that's just not something that I felt I could just flip a switch mm-hmm. and know what to say and how to say it right. I mean, I say everything wrong. Facilitators are always being like, April, you can't say that. People are going to, you're going to imprint something on their brain when they're in a vulnerable state. Right. But I'm not the facilitator, you know? So it is a very special way that you use your words. I'm learning. So I wanted to learn all of that. I didn't know what I didn't know. And for 3 years, I've used the podcast as a way to understand what's happening with these compounds as they relate to women's hormones, what's happening in women's lives where they feel the desire to say yes and to choose something that's really been stigmatized and misunderstood. I'm Gen X, right? So I grew up with eggs frying on sidewalks or pans, right, or whatever, you know, like all of it's bad, 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 bad. Just say no. And that worked with for me. It certainly has definitely worked for people who are, I'm in my late 40s, and I think people that are 10 years older than me are much, women in particular, much more resistant to psychedelics than my age group. Is just like anecdotally, I feel like they're just really hit them at the right time. Oftentimes they do still participate in cocaine. So I don't know. you can figure that out for yourself. But yeah, it's been a real privilege to take the time and figure out the space and the consumer and all of it. So I come up with a loose idea for where I feel there is this interest, for instance, the integration, or where music and psychedelics come to mind. And then I outline who could I interview? What could I do? How could this be different? I make too much work for myself, Martin, is the truth of it. But if this is my product and I'm a creative, it's very, very hard to do it in a different way. And if you listen to the production of the show, it's not great, because guess what? I'm, for the last few seasons, I've been editing it, mixing it, like, what am I doing? But I really am in this process, and I'm about to turn that sort of thing over to other people to help me with. But it is meant that I have to do all this very slowly. So I really am taking the time to understand what we're putting out. And when I get it wrong, right, I get to go back and be like, oh, yeah. I said psilocybe wrong. It's not psilocybe, you know, like those sorts of things where you just never hear some of these words spoken where you're like, oh, that's shoot. I just said it wrong for all these people to learn. So I am learning on the job, and I'm very, very clear about that, right? Like, I'm on this journey with you, and as I learn this, I'm sharing it here, and we're figuring this out together. But always, I feel I'm asking questions about women that I don't hear on other shows, or just in a I talk to so many different people, whether they're medical experts, women that have had conditions that have been treated with psychedelics, researchers that aren't necessarily like clinical, like working with the patients. And so what they're, it's just, I get to talk to so many different point of view in terms of how it all relates that I get to connect dots. And that's the story that I want to tell over the arch of a season is after I've interviewed the people I've determined are experts or might have a really compelling narrative to share with other women. I listen to all the audio. I have all the scripts out. I'm redlining and mixing, and this goes here to tell this story. And then you create an episode. Okay. Season three, for instance, when we're teaching women how to integrate, you start off with this is what an integration facilitator is. This is who yours is, and this is the reason that they're important. Episode one. Episode two is how to set an intention, right? And then episode three is, I actually don't think episode three was understanding the medicine itself. And then, mindset. So episode three is your mindset, the set of set and setting. And that, what I chose to really focus on there is a fixed versus a flexible mindset. We all hear this all the time, but it's actually really critical in your intake and in your journey and afterwards too, in a way that I hadn't thought about. So that came out after re-listening to things and looking at the scripts. I didn't have that specific angle, you know, in mind, but that really struck me as, oh, this is a concept people understand now. It's been discussed. And what happens if you are just so fucking hell bent on your journey going into this one thing that you want to take care of, and it decides to take you in a different place? Guess what's going to happen? Everyone I've talked to means you're going to have a really rough journey.
Yeah.
So just having the opportunity to stress that, got to be flexible. And then episode 4 is all about the medicine. Like, how do you choose which Psilocybe cubensis you should use? How much? How to prepare it? All of that. And then episode 5 is in setting and how critical setting is. And anyway, so it just goes, I think that we had maybe like up to 10 episodes in that season, because then we interviewed the integration of all the women as well. So yeah, I want to do another series like that, but wow, there's a lot of work.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. And it also sounds like it's the kind of thing that you do need to take a break in between quote unquote seasons, because there's so much thought and time and structuring of the overall narrative that goes into it, which again is totally different from this podcast. I have an interview with somebody, put out a new episode once a week. I've been doing this now for 16 years. You know, I've had a couple breaks, but it hasn't been so that I can work on the production or anything like that. So it's just, you know, it's a very different way of going about it. But I really like that idea. And also, as a person who is deeply, deeply creatively motivated, I just speaking for myself, there's nothing I love more than having a project. It's like, yeah, I've got the project, I've got the idea, I've got the plan. And then just the absolute joy of making it happen. That, so I'm sure that it also comes with a deep sense, not only of having learned yourself and having presented a product that people are learning from and is of value to them, but also I'm sure it's deeply satisfying for yourself. Just that internal sense of, yeah, I'm using what I've got. I'm putting it to work.
I always want to re-listen to this season though and like change so much. You know, yeah, you think you're satisfied, but you're like, oh, this is what we didn't, I should have. And I mean, that just comes with new information, which fortunately in psychedelics, we are getting new information more so than I feel like in cannabis. So there's been more updates and ways to explain things that I don't feel like I had in cannabis with evidence-based, evidence-backed research. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then that just provides the motivation for doing the next season, right? Like, oh, well, there's something new. Here's something else to put out. But I can understand that, you know, going back and, I wish that were better, or I'd like to change that. But it's like, you know, as an author, sometimes people ask me about writing books and they say, well, what if I didn't say everything I wanted to say in the book, or that I go back and now I think it's all different. And then my response is always, well, that's your next book then. Like, go do the next thing. Go do the next thing. Don't worry about the inadequacies of what you've already put out. You know, do the next thing and do it better. And then you can also critique your older material if you want. You know, you have that freedom.
It's true. You know, we're creating in public, right? We're showing everyone our creative process in a way. And so you just have to realize nothing is, it's there. People see it, but you do always have another opportunity to come back and be like, I've got more information. You're right. This format, the audio format is really fun in that way. I think you're forgiven for a lot because it's intended to be a time capsule, right?
Yeah. It's what we knew at the time. Then if we get an update, if we have to change our views, then we can do that. And that also, I think, is just a reflection of someone who's being responsible about knowledge and information. And especially if we're taking anything from either a social or even a scientific standpoint, that socially things change over time. So what was quote unquote true for people 20 years ago is not necessarily true today. And what we know scientifically is always changing and always updating. And sometimes people have a really sort of mistaken or dogmatic idea that science is like, no, this truth has been set in stone and that's it. And so science is intolerant of change, but it isn't. That actually we're constantly updating and revising. And I say we, I'm not a scientist. Human beings are constantly updating and revising what we quote unquote know scientifically based on evidence. And that's what I like about it. It's like, okay, we've got some results here and now we're going to change our view. And speaking of science, then I did want to come back to a topic that you've mentioned a couple different times and also is in the materials that you sent me initially, was this idea of looking at women's psychedelic experience and how it relates to various hormone fluctuations that they might go through over the course of a month and also over the course of their lives. And for men, this is a totally different topic. So I'm curious about what you've learned there, where people are focusing, what people are concluding, and where is there the best hope for positive outcomes for people in terms of using psychedelics for women who, you know, are going through hormonal fluctuations. So it's a totally new topic for me. I've never had anybody on talking about that. So anywhere you want to start.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah. Well, I think that my first hint that the cannabis was, that hormones played a role in the manifestation of an altered state of consciousness for women, that first realization came to me with cannabis. And it was through listening to other women's stories. And then I think finally somebody that had a scientific background was able to say, so when women have lower estrogen, their tolerance is closer to that of a male, right? Just think of like low estrogen, high testosterone. I don't know. Yeah. I can't, you know, sort of means that it's just going to take a lot more THC for a woman to either be able to use cannabis to mitigate pain or to actually be able to reduce her stress, like, you know, escape in a way maybe that she's looking to. It just will require more THC at that time in either her monthly cycle, which is our estrogen is the lowest right after we've had our period. So after your period, you are likely to need more cannabis in order to get the same high. Whereas if you consume like the day before you start your period, you're really sensitive. And that can often be when people are like, I don't know what happened. I took the same amount of gummy I always take, right? And yeah, so that we know. Well, we don't have a lot of research on exactly, but there's enough that we do know that that THC does interact with a woman's hormonal shifts. Later on in life, when you're in perimenopause, and which is where I am now, we have uneven amounts of estrogen, progesterone that are delivered to us. We don't know when it's going to arrive. So you don't really know how you're going to hit, THC is going to hit you as well. But again, the lower your estrogen levels, the higher your tolerance. So most likely, most of the time, you're going to need more THC. Once you've had that, your shift is complete and you have been without a period for a year and you're now officially in menopause, you know, or you could say postmenopausal. I don't really actually know the correct way. I don't think any of us have quite figured out how we're supposed to discuss this yet, but both are correct in their own strange way. But then our hormone levels go back. Like they're not totally perimenopause level. We don't have the fluctuations throughout the month though, because we don't get a cycle. But our estrogen isn't necessarily that it's so low like it is in perimenopause, or that we get a spike where it's so high at some point in the month. It's more even most of the time. So that can mean it's lower than average, right? But it doesn't mean that it's plummeting at one point in the month and then skyrocketing another time. So you just don't get those shifts as much once you're firmly in menopause. So with psilocybin, that acts on the serotonin pathway, and estrogen also helps to create serotonin. And so there is a relationship there with psilocybin and where you are in your cycle. There's Jennifer Chesick wrote a book called The Psilocybin Handbook for Women. And she interviews a woman, De La Mica is, she's an indigenous, I think she's more of an educator. She's probably a facilitator too. I should know that and I don't, but she knows from working with indigenous cultures that they work with women with the mushroom for 3 months because they need to work with them through three cycles to see how it's really working with their hormones. Mm. So when you're microdosing, the reason we have a 12-week protocol for women is because of that reason. Our hormones shift throughout the month. You're more sensitive to psilocybin certain times of the month. You should know that so you can work with it in correct ways. But we all have different cycles. Some people are in 28 days, some people are in 14 days. You know, it's different for everyone. So you really, to personalize your protocol as a woman, you have to think about and track your cycle. So the luteal phase, which is between, I hope, but I'm pretty sure, between your periods, that's the optimal time to take a macro dose because your hormones are, they are the most, I think it's your estrogen is at its peak. And so it means that you are in an optimal place to receive psilocybin in terms of how it works on those receptors. I needed to actually do a little bit more research on that as to exactly why, but I do know that that is the recommendation that you do it between your periods so that you don't have a wildly like unexpected journey because your hormones are in one direction too far.
Wow. Well, that is just amazing information. And this right here, this is my introduction to it. I've never heard any of this before. And it just obviously points to why it is significant to actually have women involved in this space and studying and looking at all this, and particularly looking at women's bodies, women's hormones, women's fluctuations, and how they may be impacted by these experiences. Because if we're just working from the male model, I mean, we're going to miss any of this. And like I said, this is the first time I've ever even had somebody mention this. And it's interesting, not that I would expect women to just know this because this is like, seems like relatively new information, but even in the many women that I've had on the podcast, this has never been a topic that's ever been mentioned by anyone. And it never even occurred to me that this might play a role in how people are reacting to different dosage levels. And I shouldn't even say people, how women are reacting to different dosage levels. And it seems so significant. Like if I were a woman, I would totally want to know this information. 100%.
Yep. And you can understand why women may have more fear around consuming something, because if they've done it in the past and they haven't had this type of knowledge, it really is a much more dramatic journey depending on where your hormones are. Yeah. And if you're not expecting that, you know, and no one else around you is either, because they don't know, right? We just didn't ask these questions before. We knew we should. It's just, we're lucky to be doing this. We're lucky to be in this space when we are, right? Because we can get the right information out to way more people than we could have even 10 years ago. And so, it's perfect timing. But I think a lot of women, unfortunately, have had some pretty bad experience, including myself, right? Not knowing this info.
Yeah. And it's just quite beautiful at how far we have come from the eggs in the frying pan. This is your brain on drugs, back when we were younger, those are the messages that we received. Like I always like to share that when I first tried cannabis, when I was like 15 years old, my immediate response is everything I've ever been told about this is a complete lie. It's just not true. Hmm. And then as I started to research into it, like, hemp, for, paper and rope and uses medicine and all these historical uses of cannabis is like, nothing from the war on drugs can I trust. But we're definitely in a different era where people don't have to be secretive and underground. Like even when I started this podcast, if like people ask me, oh, what do you do? And I say, oh, well, I'm into psychedelic medicines, it would usually generate a giggle. Like, oh, really? Like, oh, yeah, I did acid back in the 60s. But we're just in a different place where people are more comfortable being able to talk about it. People can talk about their microdosing. People can share about their experiences. And we're much more open to medical research, scientific research. And it's become much more integrated within culture. So it allows us that freedom to not feel like we have to hide it or be embarrassed or be ashamed. And that allows for greater benefits and health and safety for everyone.
Right. Yeah, it's true. And societies in which we take care of our women are less violent, more literate, right? So we really are having a shift right now in, I think, in US and hopefully around the world in terms of really how we think about, I like to say, who's healing the healers? And if we know that 3 out of 4 healers are women, it's really an interesting time to watch these facilitators. Like, how do they navigate self-promotion with social media when they know it's the worst thing they could be doing for themselves, right? Like, so how are we making sure that their gifts are, you know, shared with the people that need them without sacrificing their mental health, right? So yeah, it's a really interesting time. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've already mentioned thinking about making another season of your podcast. But at this point, like, where do you see your interests going? What do you want to develop more? What are you interested in learning more about? And where do you see yourself contributing as we get into the next 5 or 10 years?
So my goal has always been, since I left cannabis, I don't know if that's the right way to describe it, but since starting to work in psychedelics in addition to cannabis, but again, I've really been focusing my time in the last few years, so it seems disingenuous to say that I'm still working in cannabis when, I mean, I can speak to it and I feel like I'm speaking to women, but psilocybin is really where I find myself today. That said, I learned everything about what I want to do in the next 5 or 10 years because I had the opportunity to work in cannabis starting almost 10 years ago. And when I had to shift out of the space, as I mentioned, it was because we didn't have any research. So my goal has always been to build another company that has a successful exit or generates enough revenue every year where we can underwrite women's health research in cannabis and psychedelics. As it stood 3 years ago, women were spending $200 before they found the right cannabis product. And that is, you know, that's inexcusable. That's large companies not spending money on research so that they can precisely tell their customers which product to use, how to use it correctly, and get them to the solution without having to spend $200. That's so much money. Yeah, considering we're really just talking about them getting a $20 product or a $50 product, right? And so, so that's where I'd like to see this go. And with the curriculum, with practitioners, again, behind the scenes, I'm trying to see how do we partner with an academic institution to work with this protocol in group and at least get an observational study of how talking about consciousness during the period in which you're microdosing and really showing up with intention when you take that dose a couple to 4 or 5 times a week, depending on the protocol you choose, then, you know, I feel like we're at least starting the conversation of, oh, this is what happens when we take the time to learn what our constituents, what our consumers need, right? We did when I was with Vanderpop, the company that I founded and have mentioned and sold, we did the Women in Weed survey, and we asked 1,500 North American women what their attitudes, behaviors, beliefs around cannabis was. I was doing research this week and I'm going through, it's still cited. It was from 2017. There's nothing new, right? We definitely need to update to that at the very least. But that's what gets me excited. How can we start to do some market research and really understand where where women's needs are, and then how do we create products to get, you know, to get them to, because with cannabis, I feel like your cannabis, to me, I've seen that it helps to, solve the problem of symptoms. It really works on symptoms, whereas I feel like psychedelics works on whatever that core wound or trauma is that's causing the symptoms that have manifest as a result of it. So like both are really, really needed. I just think that if people could deal with the core stuff, then they maybe wouldn't, you know, need cannabis in the ways that they think that they do, or that they have found themselves needing up to this point.
Right. If they can reach a resolution, then there's the symptoms that you're treating that might not be showing up. And and of course, both are necessary, because sometimes, especially if you're suffering from some particular symptoms, that the immediate thing is you want some relief there. And then that gives you the freedom and the space to, okay, now let me investigate what's the cause and can I find a resolution there? So April, we've touched on a lot of different topics today. I'm just curious, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you were hoping that we might be able to get to in this conversation, or have we covered the board?
Well, I mean, I could talk to you about 5-MeO-DMT for another hour and 20 minutes if you wanted to, because I have lots of questions. So I feel like this conversation is to be continued and I need to have you on my show. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, well, we can
feel like that's what we haven't gotten to.
Yeah,
what you do so well. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we can leave that for a future conversation. I'm always willing to talk. I'm a talker. You know, I have to restrain myself when I have guests on, because it's always like, oh, I want to share this and I want to talk about that too. So, you know, got to like, you're the host. Keep it in the background. Come on, let the other person talk.
I'm not very good at that.
I like to practice my listening skills.
There you are.
Yeah. Well, great. So let's go ahead then, and maybe we'll have a future conversation there, but let's go ahead and remind the listeners of where they can find you and all that you've been talking about and everything that you've been sharing here on the podcast today. Where can people find you online and in the internet world, and also hooking up in Seattle for some of these like museum mushroom events and whatnot?
So I would say I have two websites. The high.guide is everything about my podcast. And you can find the podcast on Spotify and anywhere you listen to podcasts at The High Guide with April Pride. And the other company that is really my it's like my creative studio. It's called Of Like Minds. And you can find psilocybin products there that we gift in the Seattle area, and our integrative microdosing protocol with Kendra that we'll have be rolling out with practitioners over the next year. So, and the events are also listed at oflikeminds.co.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today and for all that you've shared. It's really been a very enjoyable conversation and a nice opportunity to get to know you and what you're bringing to modern psychedelic movement, and really appreciate the focus on women and women's needs and women's experiences. And hopefully it's something that's only going to continue to grow and deepen as we learn more.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time, Martin.
All right.
Courage at last to simply I'll tell you.